Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Giggly Anthony Torgrud.
I don't know why this happens every week. I can't just keep a straight face while you do your intro. It's because I stare at you the whole time and I feel like you're staring back. So it just makes me laugh. But yeah, go ahead, follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45.
Good stuff. And two new things. Number one being I'm sunburnt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's bad, isn't it? We actually had some weather above 20 degrees Celsius. So I don't know what that is for you.
Like, me either.
70?
Fuck, I don't know. Is that hot to you?
It's hot to my pasty skin. But yeah, nice weather, ended up outside and got sunburnt. Another thing being I'm back in my bedroom doing this, so that's fun. I tried to put up the flag as a prop. Oh, Jesus Christ. And then the Madeleine McCann thing comes up.
I know, of course. Yeah.
That's like such a source of drama in this country. You have no idea.
Yeah, I guess they got a new suspect or whatever.
Yeah, like if they've German actually found prisoner. Someone. It's someone
new suspect identified,
to.
Yeah. Anyways, this is not the Madeleine McCann podcast.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not.
But yeah, to put it in perspective, that's 41 Celsius for me is what I'm at right now.
Whoa!
Yeah, just it's another like day double. In the neighborhood.
Really double. So speaking of another day in the neighborhood, America's not doing too great right now.
Yeah, it's tumultuous to say the least, and we'll keep it at that.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into it because I feel like people listen to us for whatever reason they listen to us, but sometimes maybe to like be an escape from normal life and to just talk about football, to talk about the things that they enjoy. But at the same time, I don't want to seem ignorant and ignore everything that's going on. I don't have any message about anything because obviously as a brand, we try to stay just away from everything to do with politics, and that includes everything. And I know there's people who would argue it's a humanitarian issue and all that kind of thing. I get that. But we just try to stay away from everything apart from football. But all I will say is to anybody who listens to this podcast who may think about getting caught up in that kind of thing, whatever, just stay safe. Like, please stay safe. You know, most important thing is just to protect yourself, really, I guess. And it's a difficult one. And like I say, I hope there is nobody that listens to the podcast who is caught up in that kind of thing. But yeah, that's just it. Just stay safe. And with that, we move on. So I don't want to start with. There's been plenty going on recently. It seems like we have one potential head coach, maybe three potential head coaches, depending on what you read. Ranić's coming, he's not. There's six wanted signings, there's three wanted signings. He's going to build around six of our current squad. Literally, rumour mill is in overdrive at the moment as we head towards the resumption of the season, which is to be expected, obviously. Uncertain times on and off the pitch for us at the moment. So we've talked about the Zlatan thing, the Zlatan injury that came last week. He's back in Milan, so that's good. He will have a test. Hopefully tomorrow, they're saying. So that's Thursday. We record on Wednesdays now. Leo Duarte is going to be out for a couple of weeks, they're now saying, which isn't too bad. I wouldn't imagine he'd have been up there. And you shrugged there, which kind of says it all. You know, he's not. He wouldn't have been up there in the defensive hierarchies anyway. But heading into that Juve game, I don't think he would have especially been a starter in a game like that. But wish him the best in his recovery, obviously. And, so we basically now don't really have a squad going into that Juventus game. Coppa Italia semi-final, second leg. Obviously, we've got it all to do after Ronaldo's late penalty. The game finished 1-1, so we've now got to go and score an away goal, which without Ibrahimovic, without Castillejo, seems pretty difficult.
And another one, which is already, I believe, our weakest position. Our first and second string will be missing. Sounds like Salamakers is going to be starting right back as well.
I heard Conte was
injured. Yeah.
Conte's, it's weird that because there's no diagnosis specifically of the injury. It's just that he's come back not feeling well.
Yeah, so I imagine that means he's out of shape. He didn't train or something, which, I mean, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that. The average person was kind of limited on what they could do physically, but he's a professional footballer. I'm sure he has some sort of exercise equipment at home. He could have stayed in shape. So he's got a history of being injured and out of shape anyway, so it's not too much of a surprise, just kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I mean, like you say, if that is what it is, we don't know. Something may come out about that. So we'll await further judgment on that. But for now, let's assume he's not eligible for selection. So then you've got two things to do. You can either put Salamakis at right back and then play Calabria or Laxalt at left back, or you play Calabria at right back and play Laxalt at left back. Not sure what
the go-to move is. I thought Calabria was out for some reason, like suspended or something.
No, Calabria's fine. He can play that game.
Why did I think it was just Salamakis was the only option? Or Teo's out. That's what it is, huh?
Teo's out, yeah.
He's so, out yeah, Calabria has to go on the left. But you just mentioned, we got Laxalt now, so that sounds like it might be the plan. Okay.
Well, I say, we got Laxalt now. Like, it's all sorted.
It just made sense to me.
Yeah. No problem. So apparently there's like a few different combinations, a few different formations that he's considering, all of them four at the back. So it's like a 4-4-2. We kind of talked about this where there'd be like Salamakis on the right or another player. There'd be Calhanoglu on the left, Kessié Bennacer, Rebic Leal. There'd be a 4-3-2-1 where you'd have Bonaventura and somebody else behind Rebic or Leal, or like all these different formations, etc. What's the go-to at the moment? What gives us the best chance? By the way, I've got a bold prediction, because we're going to record another episode before the game happens, so we'll know a bit more in terms of concrete. For now, the date of the game hasn't even been set. It's either going to be June 12th or 13th.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I thought it was the 13th. I thought the first leg Inter and Napoli was the 12th. We were the 13th.
Their campaigns are going to change to be 4 hours, but then we're like, let's shuffle hours forward and... It's a bit of a mess, but that'll be properly confirmed hopefully in the coming days. So we will record before the game itself, but like, yeah.
Well, yeah.
I've got a bold prediction. I think we're going to take the lead in this game and end up losing. But yeah, what's your prediction for the starting 11?
let me see if I can even remember 11 of our players. Donnarumma for sure. I think it's going to be Salamakers. Yeah, it depends, man. I just don't know fitness levels, what trainings look like. Form doesn't exist anymore. There's no precursor to go off of. So let's just say we'll play them based off their positions. Donnarumma, Calabria. Who is Romagnoli's partner? who comes back?
I see it's being Gabriel or Kea. I think Musaki's down there now.
Yeah, I think Kier, Romagnoli, Laxalt, unfortunately. And I don't know if we're going to do a 4-4-2, if we're going to do the 4-2-3-1. I think we'll go with the 4-2-3-1. But I don't know. I heard rumors that Leal wasn't looking too hot in training, but then again, it's like media isn't even allowed on the training ground, so how would they know what he looks like, you know? So I don't know if he's done decent, if they feel like they could trust him, then I could see him up top and having like the three-man attacking midfield behind him. But otherwise, maybe we go just with a 4-3-3, go back to basics on it. And I can't even finish an 11. I have no idea.
It's difficult. It's really difficult. And I think that's the reason that so many of the media outlets, Sky, Milan News, Mediaset, whatever, have all been saying like there's at least three or four different formations that he's picking from at this point. At the moment, it would be a pure prediction rather than an educated guess, but I would say that he'll probably go with a 4-3-3. That's just my gut feeling. And the back four will be pretty much exactly what you said. I think he'll play Calabria. I think he'll play Kea, Romagnoli and Laxalt. I think Kessié and Bennacer will play as two sort of deeper line midfielders. Then it might be Calhanoglu, Bonaventura wide left.
I can see it.
Rebic wide right, probably. Because he lends to be more of a right-sided player, and then Leal up top. I mean, I agree. I don't know how, you know, the media can possibly understand or have heard that Liao's doing bad in training, but I think he gets a game regardless to go out and prove himself. This feels like a bit of a free shot because we're not expected to do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
The first leg was difficult. We've got so many injuries and suspensions to deal with. We need to go there and score, and scoring hasn't really been our strong point this season. So it does feel like a free shot. I stand by my prediction that we take the lead.
I could see it happening if... it really just... It's so weird to play the second leg of a semifinal essentially at the start of a new season, you know? Mm-hmm. Because... there's so much lead up to a game like that that you could predict things based off form, based off mentality, how players have been looking, like the way previous games have gone. You could predict changes that coach will make. But in this situation, it's just so open-ended that I don't know. I mean, does Rebic come in with that fire that the season ended on? Does he come back with the season began where he's not doing hot? I mean, there's so many variables and we just don't have any answers.
Yeah, you're right. We don't. And again, I feel so sorry for Pioli in all of this because there's been various rumours as well that he feels kind of weakened and unsettled by everything that's going on in the media, the speculation surrounding his job future, and how that might affect the squad. Not only has he got to battle that, but he's got to battle so many different selection issues, and he's got to do it in a stadium that we've never won in. And it's just so many things that stack up against us. And just doesn't really fill me with much confidence. But like I say, when we properly preview the game next week, we'll probably have a better idea of what the lineups are going to be and everything that's associated with it. But for the time being, it just seems like players are dropping like flies as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think there's going to be a few more injuries that come around before the season properly resumes. And there's going to be plenty of injuries when the season actually does resume. Going to such a condensed schedule like that, you know, young players might be able to deal with it fairly well, but those players over 30 are going to be.
It'll be interesting to see Zlatan when he does return, how long he could stay returned, you know, because he's at an age where every injury is super easy to re-irritate. And if we're playing every 3 days or every couple days, like it's predicted right now, when he comes back, no one comes back at 100%, and B, it's just going to deteriorate quicker. So, he might not, even if he returns, he might get injured again, I think. I mean, never count the Swede out. He is a freak of nature. He's not your standard player. He's not your standard human. He pulls through all the time, but logic says it might not look too hot for him.
Definitely. And I think we've seen twice since he arrived that he's not immortal. You know, he had that injury that kept him out for a couple of league games, and we struggled. And then, obviously, he's come back and got the injury. He's going to be out for around about a month, obviously, as they say. It'd be interesting to see how we deal without him this time around. But you're right, you know, he's not a normal 38-year-old player, and he has the mentality to bounce back as quick as possible. But unfortunately, his muscles aren't made of what they were before. And that's just the way it is. And I can see why the club don't want to rush him back, because the risk of re-aggravating the injury, if the next time it were to be more serious, like a tear, rather than just an overstretch, then that'd be it. His career would be done. There needs to be an element of protection in all of this as well, and acknowledging that one more serious injury, then his career is done. So I understand the carefulness with that as well. But now, you know, I guess we see what we're made of without somebody who's come in since January and being an out-and-out leader for us. And we'll see if we have the goals elsewhere in the team to be able to achieve Europa League qualification. And quite frankly, if we don't, and if we keep struggling to score and keep struggling to break teams down and win games, then I don't think we deserve it anyway. But we'll see. Plenty of selection problems. Glad I'm not Stefano Pioli at this point for more reasons than one.
Happy.
Feel so bad for him. Like,
yeah, it's a tough resigned. Position. I mean, besides just being a good human, like, what is the point in continuing, you know? I mean, his paycheck, like, he knows he's not going to be there next season. He knows that his chances of succeeding this season are slim. It's like, you have nothing going for you other than pulling off a miracle and then getting sacked afterwards, you know? Like, it doesn't look good for him. Even if he knew he was just kind of a placeholder manager, I don't know. I feel like he's getting shafted a little bit, but I understand. You know, Pioli's not the guy to lead any club to a Champions League spot. You know,
I think it's important to note as well where we started with the whole Pioli appointment. It was like, oh, it's until the end of the season. That's the best thing I can say about it. Like, he won't be around forever. The opinion when he was hired was very negative.
Yeah.
And he seems to have shifted the tide to a point where, like, at least some people are acknowledging he's been hard done by in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of... It is a results business. And if he had been on an absolute tear... You know, he'd done well, but he hadn't been on an absolute tear. If he'd have done that, then it had made the decision more difficult. But with all the leaks coming out and stuff, it really kind of helped his position in the dressing room. I acknowledge that. I mean, we got a good question, which I will ask now, from Tommy Tank, who says about, you know, the idea that when Ranić takes control next season, there was the idea in the media as well about Nagelsmann coming in the season after. And he says that if Ranić basically doesn't want to be the head coach and he just wants to be a director, what about keeping Pioli for that first season to keep a bit of continuity, and the fact he's obviously brought the team together, and then for the start of the 21-22 season, bringing in a more permanent head coach?
I'm going to say no to that idea, solely because if Nagelsmann is the idea who we're going to move forward with a long term, and currently Ralf is a one-year man, the difference between Ralf and Julian is so minute that it is continuity. They work together. They have a very, very similar system. I mean, we're talking the, like, decimals difference in percentage of what they do, you know? And it makes sense to let Ranić lay down that groundwork and then move into his higher-up role. It's going to make him more successful in the long run, and I think it'll make us more successful in the long run, because ultimately, Pioli has a very basic system that works in Italian football, but it's also easily conquered in Italian football. You know, there's nothing special to it. And giving him an extra year, while nice and probably deserved given the situation, everything we've gone through, long-term, it may be more detrimental. It may cost us another year of development. If we just make the switch now, it won't be as if we made, you know, three coaching changes in 3 years going Pioli, Ranić, Nagelsmann. It'll be almost just one smooth change, and then essentially Ranić is Nagelsmann going into that second year. It, just the name changes, but now we have another guy who knows the system. The players know the system. He's just younger, can go longer. And then Ralf is now building a squad based off the system that he knows he created, and he knows his coach is going to follow. It makes more sense to go that route.
I'm not even going to add any more to that. You've literally just read my mind. Yeah, pretty spot on. Yeah, I think the only reason that Pioli could ever probably be given another season would be out of sentimentality, or if something were to mess up in a negotiation somewhere where Ranić were to say, I don't feel comfortable being the head coach for this team next season, let me just focus on one role. And even then, he might want to bring in his own guy for a year or two. But yeah, I don't see any way that Pioli stays. I wouldn't if I was him either. You know, I'd walk and say I wasn't treated 100% fairly by the club. Yeah, he was lucky to get the opportunity in the first place, given how things have gone at his last two clubs. But at the same time, he is now being credited for the work that he's done, and he probably will get a semi-decent job off the back of this. And then his attention needs to be, you know, piling everything into that and trying to prove to us that that he was mistreated. Mishandled, but yeah, the Nagelsmann thing is fascinating, because I don't see how Leipzig let him go. You know, they're already letting go of a key man in Ranić to come and join us, allegedly. But I don't see how they let go of the best young manager probably in European football at the moment, you know, in terms of managers under 35, let's say. And that would be such a big dent to the Red Bull project in football as a whole. You know, the way we know it is a production line, where they've got obviously Red Bull Brazil, and they've got all the other feeder clubs into Salzburg, which gets them into Europe, and then they go on to Red Bull Leipzig or Rasenballsport Leipzig.
I have a theory, and it's based off nothing but an idea that's in my head. So, you know, take it with like half a grain of salt. What if this rumored takeover is not a takeover, but so much as a partnership, Elliot and Red Bull. Elliot and Red Bull move forward. That would make sense with Ranić. That would make sense with Nagelsmann. And now we're a part of the big Red Bull empire. Now, Salzburg, Leipzig, all those clubs are feeders for Milan. And, I mean, now they have a team that has that proven history in Europe. They don't have to change the name to RB. You know, it'll be recognizable, maybe a shirt sponsor or something, which I don't know. I think it would be wise business for both, but I don't know if it will happen. I probably doubt it.
It is an interesting theory. It's like some kind of football manager,
yeah,
fantasy thing that you dream up. I get it, and I know that a lot of people have been reading between the lines, probably a bit too much on what Pietro said. Pietro Prota from Radio Rossoneri said that we're set to announce a new sponsorship agreement in an unconventional way, and he described it as being like the Nike PSG Jordan thing.
Yeah,
which is interesting because it suggests that it's fashion based, but it also suggests a collaboration between brands that wouldn't normally collaborate, I guess. So that could mean anything.
There's three main ones in that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the main one, the most obvious one, would be what you mentioned to me in private chat earlier about the Puma Icons line. You know, their higher end one. That would make the most sense. The one that I think people immediately went to was a Louis Vuitton one. I immediately went to it. Mm. That, because of the talks there, that would be massive. What a sign that would be towards a potential takeover. And then the other one, which PPB, he said no, but is a proven thing that we know is going to happen, is Puma has a collaboration with Baller that's going to be coming out for three clubs. It was Milan, Dortmund, and someone else. I can't remember who. But that's going to be
I think.
Yes, Man City. And that's going to be a blackout kit that will come out. That is a real thing, but he confirmed that's not the deal he's talking about. So there's one in addition to that, too. So it's interesting. I'm all for it.
Yeah, the Louis Vuitton thing is obviously, like you said, it's the one that everybody's mind's probably thinking, is there something there? I don't think so. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. Yeah. I feel like it would be teased as bigger news if it was something like that. But the Baller thing has already basically been announced. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't... I personally think it's going to be that we're pioneering this new range of kits, which is like a heritage-inspired thing. You know, my gut is that we do some kind of launch for one of the kits next season. And we do so with like a creative video of some sorts. Mm-hmm. And it may be in collaboration with a brand to help launch it. I don't know, like one of our new sponsors, for example, we've been reeling in the new sponsors like Skrill and you know, all these online money managers. I can't remember. We've lost count of a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one. It's one that's on the horizon to look forward to. But what else is there off the pitch? Oh, did you read the Forbes thing earlier?
I didn't get a chance to, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I looked it up and I saw the article and I clicked on it, but then I was occupied.
Right, so it was an interesting one. It was by Chloe Beresford. It is worth a read for anybody who hasn't read it. You just search Forbes AC Milan and you'll see it. Basically, a few more quotes from Yong Hong Lee, but it takes a dive, does this piece, into the history of Paolo Scaroni, who is basically our club president at this point. And it unearths a few interesting things. One of them being that he's known Silvio Berlusconi since 2001 and was actually one of Berlusconi's associates during talks with Vladimir Putin over a particular political issue. He's known Elliot for a few years. He's been in and around Elliot management for a few years. And then also he's been part of Rothschild Italia. Mm. And the significance of that being that when Yong Hong Lee took over the club, he obviously borrowed money from Elliott Management. But when he was struggling with the repayment of loans, which was apparently in part due to this, according to this article, it was in part due to the fact that the Chinese government had clamped down on overseas investments in football clubs. And I remember us talking about that. About how Yong Hong was in a rush to take over the club before this clampdown came. But yeah, apparently he had problems repaying the money because of this clampdown. So he went to Rothschild Italia, which is obviously Rothschild Bank, but the Italian version, where Paolo Scaroni was also working. And they are known for being able to come up with complex solutions to refinancing things, to getting people the money that they need. But for whatever reason, they couldn't. And then obviously Elliott Management, who Scaroni knew, then seized control of the club, and now he is somehow the president of the club. So
that is interesting.
I
think it's more coincidence than anything, but I could see where the conspiracies begin in that.
Well, it's like, I suppose as a person, if you mingle in the right circles and these circles overlap, then eventually you're going to find yourself in a pretty good position, I suppose. I'm wary of not saying too much because obviously Scaroni hasn't had the chance to respond to this, or apparently the club declined to comment on this piece. But I just found it interesting that Scaroni is the guy who's been so quiet during everything. He gives like 2 interviews a season, and they're always on really trivial things like the stadium. And he just says, oh, I'm leaving everything to Gazidis, which is what he basically said in his last interview. To go from something like that to, well, what we had in Berlusconi, who was a really outspoken president, Yong Hong, through his people, through David Hanley, etc., came out with various things, and Scaroni being so silent in the media, at least, on the other hand, it makes me wonder if there's some kind of master plan at play here, if this is a role that he's been gunning for some time, or whether it's a case of like Jobs for the Boys, where it's, you know, it's better to know people than to work your way up to that kind of a position. I just found it interesting that the various links hadn't been unearthed up until this point.
I think I remember hearing that Berlusconi and Scaroni knew each other, but I didn't know what the actual connection was between them. You know, just assume rich businessmen in Italy know each other. That isn't too unfounded, but the context of what they know each other in is interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it just said that there was some kind of political relationship between them, and that he was used as a representative in various things. But Yong Hong Lee, in his quotes in that particular article, says that there's an obvious conflict of interest in what Scaroni had been enlisted to do and what he ended up doing. It's an interesting accusation, but I guess it is basically one that suggests that he never really wanted to help Yong Hong's group as a representative of Rothschild. And that there was also an accusation as well from Yong Hong Lee a while ago about there being so many leaks from the media about various things to do with the club's finances. And Paolo Scaroni was, and I think still is, on the board of directors at Sole 24 Ore, the newspaper that comes out with all the financial stuff, as is Milan's former CFO. So without saying it, it implied that might have been responsible for some of the links, the leaks of information.
That wouldn't make sense. I mean, they're extremely reliable, especially when it comes to Milan's finances.
Yeah. And if Scaroni was part of the negotiation involving a bank, then he will have known the inside out of the club's finances, because Yong Hong will have put them over on a sheet of paper and said, we need money to help with this.
Right. I mean, let's not forget there were issues with Yong Hong's money reportedly prior to the China shutdown. You know, there was the issue with the mines that he supposedly owned had been closed for years, and a lot of weird stuff there. So don't want to sound like we're picking sides or anything. I mean, just telling what we learned.
I have no reason, based on what we've heard or any of the actions or anything like that, to particularly distrust Paolo Scaroni. He seems to be more of a diplomatic, less outspoken president, and I like that. It's kind of refreshing in a sense. It will be interesting to see if there is an official response to this once they've kind of got their thoughts together, calculated. If not, I don't know if that makes it more or less interesting, but either way, you know,
it's funny. It's almost like we have an invisible president. You know, like you said, he doesn't come out too often, and when the fans get mad, they used to yell at Yong Hong, they used to yell at Berlusconi. You know, now they go at Gazidis, who's not the president. You know, he's just kind of the punching bag, because that's the one you see, the yellow Maldini. Well, it's interesting.
Scaroni literally threw him under the bus in that last interview and said, I leave everything to Gazidis.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Ranić's going to come. It's Gazidis' decision. For now, we stick by Pioli and Maldini. It's like, right, so it's not your decision regarding the next head coach, but it's your decision to say that we're sticking by the current head coach and director. That just seemed a bit strange to me as well.
That was a don't blame me sort of deal. You know, definitely. That was the most neutral answer he could give.
What makes you wonder, is he more involved in other things?
Is he just a figurehead? Does he actually do anything for the club? I mean, If or you is saw he just taking directors... up
with other things like takeover, maybe?
That'd be fantastic.
Never know, just sort of clutching at straws there, but but yeah. Where are we then? On the field stuff. What do we have? Tanguy Kouassi is looking pretty good.
Yes.
Looking pretty good. I am so happy whenever I see an article from a reliable source. And it seems to be for once in agreement between the reliable outlets like Milan News and the other outlets like Calcio Mercato, everything, Tutto Sport, whatever you think of those. And then also the outlets in France are all in agreement that we're in pole position, advanced talks, and that basically, you know, we're on the home straight in terms of getting this one done. Sounds like Ranić's going to be decisive. So if he signs and we get something announced, then that might basically be the confirmation that Ranić's coming.
Yeah,
it
I
could
agree.
Act as sort of a Trojan horse in that sense. But we
kind of touched on him in the last pod. In fact, we touched on him quite a bit, I think. Fantastic player, super hyped. I want it 100% in, 110% in. I mean, that could be Romagnoli's partner for a long time coming if things go well for us. So I'm all for it. And if Ranić is the missing piece, it sounds like everything's falling together. And I know I keep going back to the takeover, but Tanguy's probably not as big of a part of that as I'm going to make it sound. But Ranić comes, Tanguy comes. Ranić's there, the stadium gets done. Louis Vuitton comes. I mean, it just sounds like everything's coming together. And we've been like, some parts getting closer, then they fall apart. And it just sounds like everything's finally coming together.
Yeah, it's like loads of jigsaw pieces being dropped in at once.
And I'm just waiting for that kid to not realize what's happening to come and just shatter the puzzle, just wipe it away, and everything's chaos again. Because that sounds like the Milan thing to do.
That does sound like what normally happens. But yeah, I'm with you. He's 17 years old, you know, obviously. So I'm not going to get too ahead of myself on what I think he'll be, or even say that he'll be a starter immediately. But seems like a fantastic young player. Anyone who racks up senior appearances for PSG at 17 years old must be serious. And he's learned from a very good crop of defenders as well. Thiago Silva, Marquinhos. And I'm just really looking forward to the idea that this is, for once, a low-risk, no-brainer signing. Yeah. You know, we'd have to pay 500k compensation or something like that. And the deal, yeah, we might have to pay a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? Signing on bonus or something like that to the agents, but transfers.
His contract isn't going to cost much. You know, that's the great thing of a 17-year-old. When you buy them, you pay for their potential, and the contract's low. But since this is a free, or like you said, 500,000, I mean, there's just no downside to it, none at all.
Mm. No, I totally agree. I just feel like, you know. Again, probably don't expect too much, but I feel like this is one of the most unanimous agreements that I've seen across our fan base in terms of, yes, go out and get this guy. It can't possibly go badly.
And I'm actually going to do the opposite of what you just did and say, you know, you don't want to get overhyped. I fully believe he instantly slots in as a starter. I mean, just from what I've seen of him at PSG compared to what I've seen of our other defenders, I think he's instantly our second best. And granted, the defending quality that you need in the French league is not as high as you need in Serie A, but I've seen him do some great things. And I firmly believe he'll slot right in.
Well, trust your judgment on that. I find it interesting if we're going after a particular mold of defender, you know, obviously Upamecano has been mentioned and Kouassi has been compared to him, then it would make sense that we've gone after someone similar and thought, yeah, much more cost-effective deal. Let's see how we get on. I think, like everything, it probably depends on the other players that we're bringing in that particular position. But it bodes so well, you know. It would look really good to go out and snatch a player that PSG obviously value very highly, and to bring him in. It would be a nice kickstarter to the era, especially with all the other links that are going on at the moment. Obviously, we've touched on Florentino Luis plenty. But that seems to be moving a little bit closer. Apparently, Benfica are willing to let him go on a loan with option or obligation to buy. Again, loan with option to buy. We're protecting ourselves so much with a deal like that. It's like we get him on a 2-year rental, and if he's good, then we pay the money. If not, then he goes back, you know? And then Szoboszlai is hopefully moving in the right direction, but then Salzburg's sporting director came out and said things have been a bit slow on that front, so we'll see how that develops. The striker thing's been a bit quiet. You know, we've had the Jovic stuff, the Boadu stuff, Arkadiusz Milik stuff came back as well. Makes me wonder if there's a hidden target or two that we're monitoring on that front. But I think it's been very obvious, you know, for a while now that we're in the market for a new centre forward, because Ibrahimovic can't be our only option.
Right.
We look so thin on depth right now. And again, we talked about that last week. Dumfries seems to be the right back. That and that, the Ajax guy. I'm not that even going to attempt. No, PSV guy is Dumfries.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name, but he's the guy who's back up to Sergiño Dest at the moment. I think it's Mazrui, something like that. Morocco international. Insight suggests that he would be a cheaper option, and that he's a pretty talented player who just happens to be stuck behind another slightly more talented player. We'll see. The one thing that I am worried about is that the right side of our defence could become very young.
Mm-hmm. It would. Yeah, I think
a 17-year-old centre-back and a 20, 21-year-old right-back. Obviously, Dumfries is 24 and he's captain of PSV, which is why I'd lean towards him naturally. Yeah.
My problem with that is, like, you could have a young centre-back, I think, but you can't really have an old fullback, you know? And it hurts to have a young entire back line, which is kind of where we'd be going. I mean, Romagnoli's not that much older than... How old is he, 22, 23?
25.
Romagnoli's 25. Oh, okay. Well, he's a bit older than I thought.
Sell him!
Get out of here! No, and Teo's pretty young himself, so now you add a 17-year-old and then you add another 20-year-old. It's like, you need some experience in there, but you can't have that as a fullback. And I know might catch heat for that because some of the best fullbacks ever have been in their old age, but I just feel like in the way the sport's gone and the way that our team looks to be playing moving forward, you need to have fast, quick players in that role. And typically the older you get, the slower you get. So I feel like you have to have younger fullbacks, which means we would need an older defender. So it does kind of, I don't know. It creates an interesting problem. I don't know what the solution is.
Fullback, yeah, like you said, fullback's an interesting one. For me, it's gone from probably when I first started watching football being one of the least important positions on the pitch, because they're covered by midfielders and they're covered by centre-backs, and they're never judged on what they do at the opposite end of the pitch. It's now considered one of the most important positions in football because of what they're asked to do. They're asked to cover so much ground. They're asked to contribute with assists and goals if possible, but also... with the way that teams are playing within a higher line, they're falling under much more scrutiny in terms of the defensive ability. I mean, most people would say that Teo Hernandez has had basically a perfect season, but there are also still plenty of people who say that defensively he looks way off the mark, you know? So I understand that it's becoming one of those positions where it's very hard to find elite level players. Like, I don't know if I could name 5 elite level fullbacks in world football at the moment, whereas before there might have been plenty who would have made the cut.
I think you can name 5.
So
if you tried, you could name 5.
Kimmich, Trent. I'm not going to say like Teo or anything like that. I'm not going to go rash on that. Maybe Jordi Alba, David Alaba, perhaps. I'm struggling now. You see, I don't really know.
Think of Real Madrid. Who do they have?
Go on. That's it. No.
You don't have any.
No, go on.
I want to know what you think. Who's on their team? Do you know who's on their team?
On who?
Real Madrid.
Oh, not Marcelo.
You don't think he's elite?
Probably not anymore, because he's like 34.
I'd say he's...
What, he's certainly... All right, yeah, maybe he is.
I'd say he's
Carvajal
up there still.
Certainly isn't.
No, Carvajal, he's up there now as far as old, but...
Yeah. I mean, like, Robertson, you know... You could say he is in there.
I think Kyle Walker's up there. You could throw him up there.
I just don't think it's a position that really has the depth.
Now. I agree. It's probably the thinnest position in world football.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, which makes spotting a really good fullback for a cheap price very hard, because all the teams like zoning in on how they can fix that particular position.
Alexandro as well, I think he's fantastic. Cancelo has had a bad season, well, an iffy season, but he was fantastic the last couple seasons as well.
Yeah, I just don't like him.
Well, that's easy.
Interestingly, I like players like Halstenberg, the Leipzig left back. You know, players like that will go undervalued in all this, and I'm not saying he's elite by any means, but you know, these are players who probably wouldn't have been anywhere near that level in the old crop of fullbacks, but now they are among the
best. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think there's anyone playing today that I would put on like Roberto Carlos level, Maldini level. You know, I wouldn't.
Cafu.
Yeah, that's another great one. I wouldn't put anyone in today's game on their level, but I do think there's still elite players out there.
Yeah, but the problem is those few elite players, we've just got no chance of signing them. So again, we're looking for somebody to be a bit like Teo Hernandez, and a gem that we could unearth. There are players out there. I still think Odiozola is the guy. If we can get him, it'd be such a similar operation.
He's pretty damn close to elite, to be honest.
He's pretty good, you know.
I think the cap to break into elite for fullback is significantly lower than any other position. So that's why I'm looking at it. But
I do like the Dumfries thing though. You know, I didn't even realize for some reason him being PSV's captain at 24. When I found that out, I was like, oh, you know, that for some reason that felt like a big deal. And people might say, well, PSV, you know, it's a league in with not much quality and they're not even in the Champions League places. I get that. But to be a captain that young, he must show a bit of something.
Mm-hmm.
And his productivity.
But I also feel like that's just a young league in general. You know, I feel like it's either
mine is the
yeah, it's like
captain is 23 and
okay. Well, I just think like the league itself, the Dutch league, is like wonder kids, but highly rated prospects and returning old players. You know. Which I guess is every league, but I feel like they are mostly those young MLS. Players. Yeah, honestly, yeah. They don't have any of the high prospects.
Oh, we were linked with an MLS guy, the LAFC guy.
What? When did that
Brian
happen?
Rodriguez? Is that right?
News to me.
Yeah, it was earlier last week. Apparently in talks with his agent or whatever, but nothing else has come up about that, so we'll dodge it for the time being.
That's good.
Nothing else in terms of links, so we'll go to the questions. This we will give a bit of background on. So it's come out a few hours before we recorded this from Anto Vitiello, who didn't know this up until now, which surprises me, that Ismail Benacer has a €50 million release clause in his contract, and Man City and PSG are interested in him. So Martino Puccio asks, do you think Benacer would accept a move to City with a lack of guaranteed playing time? You answer.
Well, first off, shout out Martino. He's a great guy. He's a co-host of State of Play podcast. If you haven't already, vote for us, Sempre Milan, in the FCA Best Content Creator International. And Martino's podcast, State of Play, is nominated for Best New Content Creator. So give them a shout as well. Fantastic podcast. Fantastic guys. Shout out them. Thanks for the question. As far as would Benacer take it, I think so. I think Man City is objectively a step up right now from us, and I think you could argue PSG is a huge step up. Obviously, their quality is. I don't know if you'd argue the league is, or their probability of winning the Champions League might be the same as ours, even though they're in it and we're not. But I could see him going to PSG, A, because he'd get a shit ton more money, and I could see him going to City because it's more prestigious right now, you know? Playtime with us is guaranteed and not at the other clubs, but like, how old is he? He's 22?
22.
Yeah, I mean, he could grow into those roles and to do it at a club like that and win some trophies early in his career, plus make more money. That's the goal for every player, I think. So I would see him taking it, yes.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because he is 22 years old and obviously joined us when he was 21 from Empoli, and it took him a while to break into the first team and be a consistent member of the starting 11. But once he did that, he never looked back. And then you scale that up and you think if he were to go to PSG or Man City, it might take him a bit of time, but he'll back himself, you know, as the reigning player of the tournament from the African Cup of Nations. He will back himself to establish himself in that team eventually. You look at City, they have got players that are sort of young up-and-coming midfielders, obviously Phil Foden being the one. Depends what kind of role they see him in, but then you've got like Fernandinho, who will be leaving on a free transfer, I believe. So they do need a youthful injection in that midfield, without a doubt. PSG are probably the same, but at the same time, I don't really know what they in their midfield are looking for. You know, they signed Idrissa Gueye, for example, who is a great breakup midfielder. He is fantastic. Like, I just give us him in a swap deal, and I'm happy. But then they've got like Verratti.
There's no way that happens.
No, I know.
I think he's damn near close to N'Golo Kanté, to be honest. I think he's really fucking good, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Very, very. I really, really like him. I really liked him at Everton. I was surprised that no Premier League team proper made the
inquiry.
You know, sunk the blow and got him. But that was a good bit of business from PSG. We've obviously got Ander Herrera as well. They've got a few combative midfielders. So it'd be interesting. I think the Man City thing worries me because of Riyad Mahrez, who's obviously Benacer's Algeria teammate, and I just think he'd help him settle in. And if Guardiola really has made a personal phone call, it's difficult. You know, it's like we always say, oh, well, Maldini making phone calls should be enough to persuade any player. Well, it's the same with Pep, unfortunately.
He probably sees
an absolute shit show, tire fire of a football club that he's part of and thinks, this is my light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, and you figure, you know, Benacer and, like you said, Mara's AFCON Cup of Nations or whatever, he was the player of the tournament. Mara's knows that. They're friends, and he probably, that's when they found out about the release clause. He's like, bro, join us at City, and he maybe ingested, like, I got a 50 million release clause. Like, I'm going to Milan, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Nobody's paying 50 mil, though, I don't think. I think
maybe not in this market, but
negotiated for less. Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult for a team to play.
We would have PSG to get a replacement. We wouldn't sell him, I don't think. I mean,
it would give us our money for Tonali. That's one thing I will say. But it's tough. I know what would happen. We'd sell him and then go for Bakayoko. And we could,
we could argue that we had Bakayoko on this team already.
Like we could use the remaining money then to make sure we get GGO that long-term deal. Or there's definitely an economically tempting aspect to an offer like 50 million for a player that we've only had for a year. Don't get me
wrong.
That
we only bought for 16.
Think about it like FIFA management. There's no sentimentality in football anymore. Mm-hmm. And figures on paper mean so much. But at the same time, I think Ranić, if he heard, would be like, don't you dare sell him.
Yeah.
You know, I want to build my team around someone like that.
And he would too. That's the type of player. He would get Slobazian or whatever the hell his name is in there next to him. And like, that would be the core. That's what we would do.
We're going to have to nail down that name, aren't we?
Hey, if he gets announced, I will study. But until then, Slobbernobber.
Call him Dominic.
Is that his first name? That's so much easier.
Yeah. Just call him Dom. Yeah, Dom in there. And Si. Simon.
The big dummy.
Domino. I think he would want to build around him. But it's just something you learn in football. You know, everybody has their price. Neymar had his price. His release clause was his price. You know, and that just scares me. It's not necessarily the fact that they'll come after Benacer. It's then I think, well, does Teo Hernandez have a release clause? You know, does Rafael Leao have a release clause? If these players were to proper hit stride.
I'm sure more of them do have them that we don't know about. I mean, if we kept Benacer's a secret this whole time, I'm sure.
I'm just so happy that it's turned out that Hernandez doesn't have a buyback with Real Madrid.
Yes, that was a big one.
Because otherwise, I think that
he'd be gone.
Like, we'll just have him back. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, Marcelo's 34 years old. They could easily get a good chunk for him still to go to LA Galaxy or even Juventus and then just buy back Teo.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it really would be that simple, I think. Anyway, Next question then. Christian Espinoza, do you rate Florentino Luis and Szoboszlai? Do you think any of them would do better than Kessié? I think Florentino Luis would definitely do better than Kessié as a holding midfielder. Just seems more like Rannick's role, Rannick's type of player for that role. Kessié is... It's funny because I did a piece earlier about what our current squad, the starting 11, would look like right now if we had Rannick in charge. And I put Kessié in there purely out of lack of an alternative at holding midfield. But I think his strength is obviously his physicality and his battling nature. But I think his weakness is his decision-making. His decision-making and his execution of various things. And those two things are so important under Rannick's style of play. You know, we talk about the 8-second rule, the fact that when we win the ball back, Rannick will tell the players to get it upfield and get a shot off within 8 seconds. If you haven't read that, then Google Tempo Milan 8-second rule. It explains it all.
Or watch the video I made on YouTube. It's on this channel.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. So, yeah, Kessié doesn't strike me as that. Florentino Luis, on the other hand, does. He really does. And if people have this idea of Bennacer being a really good battling holding midfielder who can drive play forward, Luis, by the sounds of things, is the guy who would be a bit deeper. He's a pure, pure, tenacious, aggressive pit bull of a midfielder who perhaps needs a bit of work on his distribution upfield. But apart from that, he's literally ready-made for that role. There's a reason we're going after him so aggressively. And it gives me confidence that we're in talks with his agent and everything, and that this is a guy that Jeffrey Moncada has said, yeah, we should be going after him. So, yeah, this seems like the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched him play. I'll take your word for it. Szoboszlai, Szoboszlai slide or whatever. I saw him score a fantastic free kick the other day, so I'm on board with that too. That's my input, very minimal.
I like it.
It makes sense to get Leipzig players that are doing well, though. I mean, like, they already know the system. It makes sense.
Just the expense. It's like the Sabitzer thing. Yeah, we'd love to get Marcel Sabitzer, but it's like, I don't really know if we have 40 million to throw at one midfield sign at the moment, unless we were to sell Paqueta for like 30 mil and then throw the rest of the cash towards it. But I did an interesting Milan news piece that suggested that, or rather, it stated that Rannick's most expensive ever signing is just under 20 mil. And that most of his best signings, like Mane, Keita, Werner, Kimmich, have all been under 10 mil. So he'll stick to what he knows. And that is, you know, just unearthing these gems, but maybe just being able to do it that slight level above. But yeah, we'll see. Nadir Ahmed, if you could choose two players to take, one each from Inter and Juventus, who would they be?
Two players total, one each. Okay. Let me start with Juve. This is a tough one, actually. This is a really good question, isn't it?
Two names instantly popped into my head, but now I'm not sure.
Right. And you know what's weird is they're both positions we don't... Well, okay, the obvious one from Juve, I'll just go with it, Ronaldo. I mean, I'm not a fan of the guy, but... Why would you not?
Let's make it more interesting then. Two players who would fit under Rannick. You might still say Ronaldo because he does work hard.
He works hard, and I think he's just an improvement to any team. So yeah, I'm not changing my answer at all. I'm going Ronaldo, and this one's controversial. I'm going Handanovic, sell Donnarumma.
Whoa, shit!
I think Handanovic is one of the best keepers in the world. Has been for almost a decade now. I think he's fantastic. I've always praised him. And if in this hypothetical we're getting him, why not get all that money we can make from Donnarumma? I mean, goalkeepers are, yes, Donnarumma's generational, but Handanovic has got another 5-6 years in him, you know, and if not longer. And
keepers can go until like 40. Yeah. As Buffon has proven. Difficult one. From Inter, I'm going Lautaro Martinez.
Oh, that's the easy one. Damn it. I should have picked that.
Yeah, I just think that's so straightforward. He is like such a hard-working, good link-up forward. Always seems to be there. Just think of him next to like Rebic up front or something. I think, oh, shit, we'd be sorted.
He's going to Barca, I heard, huh?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those. It's a weird one. It seems to be a natural progression. Players from South America do really well. They always seem to end up at Barca.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's the Messi thing as well. You know, you want to go and play alongside his countrymen. Totally understand that. From Juve, difficult one. I guess Dybala is the one at the moment who you think, oh, he could really fit under Rannick. But I'm going to go Demiral, just because we need a centre-back, and that would kind of fix that problem that for a while. And I think like he could partner Romagnoli and you know, do a really solid job, as long as he comes back from that injury playing pretty well. But yeah, I'll go with Demiral. Right. Nuraziz Octavioan asks, who's the most underrated player in our current squad?
Ooh, I like that question. Like this. Most underrated player. I'll let you go first, while I think.
Rade Krunic. I really don't understand why people assume he's so disposable. Like, yeah, okay, if a team comes along and offers the money that we spent on him last summer, I would probably let him go if he wanted to go. But everything that we've seen from him has been good. Like, I don't get it. You know, he reminds me of kind of like Lapadula or someone. Whenever called upon, he's done well. And yet, everyone's just like, if we sell him, he's a forgotten about member of the team. Most underrated as well, because I don't feel like barely anybody rates him. But then in terms of the player that I think is probably the most widely underrated, then could go for somebody like Garbia, you know, who
it's a good one too.
People still assume we really, really need a new centre-back, etc. We need to go for a young 20-year-old centre-back who could partner Romagnoli for years, is tall, is physical, is good on the ball. And I'm kind of like thinking, we've got one, you know. But anyway,
yeah. Watch out. I mean, I think you picked all the good ones, so I'll just throw a curveball. Brescianini.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't seen him play, so I don't know, but no one rates him because he hasn't played.
That's true. That's a good shout. That is a good shout. There's not really many candidates for that, is there, which is a bit of a worry. You know, if you look at Inter squad, you might be like, oh, Barella's underrated, Sensi's underrated, Asamoah's underrated, Lazaro, and we don't really have many like that, but anyway.
No.
That's it. That is all the questions. So we're through. Another episode done. Yeah. I'm going to reiterate what you said. I forgot to mention it at the start of the episode, which I should have done. But please vote for us in the 2020 Football Content Awards. The actual awards do thing has been rescheduled until November at Spurs' stadium. Hopefully going to get a few of the members of the team over for it. We really, really want to lift that trophy. We were nominated as a finalist last time, but didn't win. This time around, we'd love to go one better and lift that trophy, especially given that we're competing against an Inter site. You know, it'd be nice to get one over on them. So for information on how to vote, check out the pinned tweet on our Twitter or go to our website and look in the features section. It will tell you how to vote. You can basically vote on Twitter by tweeting the phrase that everybody has been doing. I am voting for @SempreMilanCom in the FCA's 2020 thing. Whatever, as best club creator international, you'll see it.
It's, I'll put a link in the description of the video.
Yeah,
that should make it easier.
Yeah, perfect. That'll do it. And then there's also Instagram and a web form you can fill in, which will be in the description as well. But yeah, we really appreciate every vote. We appreciate all the support that we get for what we do as a brand across the board. Without your support, we wouldn't be in the position to be a finalist in this particular award. So yeah, thank you everybody. And in the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter @OllieFisher or @KilpinChronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Being joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, thanks for, I'm going to say thanks for having me, but you didn't have a choice. It's always fun to be here. Glad we're still doing this, 102 episodes in. It's insane to think we've even made it this far. Yeah, follow me on Twitter @Torgrud45. That's all.
Lovely stuff. Stay safe, everybody. Keep your head up as much as possible. And thank you for listening. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli!